You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Well, on the air.
Today, tokens and tokens and not tokens, lovers of people, and welcome to the show. It's Thursday, July 31st, 2014. Got to be. It's definitely got to be 420. Might be a long time back. Back to the roots. Back to the roots. One of the shit. Marijuana stores. Legal I-502 recreational marijuana stores here in the state of Clark County in Vancouver, Washington, just north of Portland, Oregon, my home at Rolla J Studios. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to teach you all about the world of legal marijuana here in the state of Washington. We've got Ramzi Hamid joining us. He's the owner of Main Street Marijuana. He'll be joining us to talk about what's going on with the supply, where are we going to get more marijuana to these stores so they don't keep running out. You know, Cannabis City up there in Seattle has been open and close many times here because they're unable to keep a reliable supply of marijuana. So we will be talking to Ramzi about that. We've also got some of the growers coming in here, making some deliveries today, right around 4 o'clock in our daily Toker Tunes hour. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk to them and find out what the latest is as far as getting those supplies up here in Washington State. Also, we'll have some time to talk about some other things going on in Washington State, which includes the biannual report from the Seattle Police Department, where they are evaluating how marijuana legalization has gone over the past 6 months. Turns out one cop in Seattle, one cop was responsible for writing 80% of the public toking tickets. He's been put on leave. We'll tell you all the details about that in our Behind the Headlines segment. Also on the show today, we'll have plenty of time to get to our 420 radio news. We'll tell you the latest updates on what's happening with the New York Times editorials on marijuana legalization that have rocked the nation. The Los Angeles Times is continuing to take a look at the scourge and scam of drug testing and drug courts. And the Washington Post has dug in just a little bit as well, giving us some facts and figures with respect to the Office of National Drug Control Policy's response to those New York Times editorials. We are live from Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, Washington. This is a legal marijuana store, and we'll give you a look around, get you to see just a little bit about what's going on here. We've got bud tenders working that we'll talk to in just a little bit as well. They've been very, very busy as people have come in for the newest shipments of marijuana that have come in here to the store. Switch a camera angle there, see if we can get you a look. There's a ATM here and the cash register, of course. The room itself surrounded by frosted glass. You got a center aisle there with some pipes and other accoutrements. And of course, we've got a great marijuana for sale here at Main Street Marijuana. And let me take the opportunity also to mention that Main Street Marijuana is not owned by that John Larson guy that you read about in the New York Times. You know, when he said that it was dumb for them to vote on legalization, but if they're going to vote on it, he'll go ahead and supply it. That's not true at all. That was a terrible, terrible mistake made by the Times, amplified by me and some other people in the movement. So we want to make sure that mistake got corrected. Hope you're enjoying our coverage here from Main Street Marijuana. We'll come back with the news in just a few minutes after we take a break and pay some of our bills here at 420 Radio. Thanks for listening. Stick around. We're back after this.
Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get hot.
Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz thinks it's okay for medical marijuana patients to go to federal prison. On May 30th, she voted against an amendment that would respect Florida's new laws and protect Florida's patients. Even though 88% of Florida voters support medical marijuana, why would Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz vote to send patients like this to prison? Is Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz out of touch with Florida?
420radio.org presents Daily Toker Tunes, random selections from our library here at 420radio.org, including Roots Monday, the best of blues, jazz, country, and folk, Electric Tuesday, the best in electronic dance and experimental music, Irie Wednesday, the best in reggae and world music, Groovin' Thursday, the best of rap, soul, R&B, funk, and hip-hop, and Rockin' Friday, the best in metal, jam band, and rock and roll. Every day at 2 o'clock Pacific Time on 4.
I don't use marijuana, but as a teacher of 36 years, I can tell you lots of other people use it. I don't believe in prohibition. I don't think it works. Prohibiting it hasn't stopped anybody from getting a hold of it. I would like to see it regulated so that maybe kids can't get a hold of it so easily. I know they get a hold of it now very easily. I support a new approach to marijuana. I support legalizing it. It's with us. It's not going to go away. And if we can get money through the taxation, we can also educate our kids about it. That's why I support it.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
Priscilla Simon is off today. I'm Russ Belville with the 420 Radio News for Thursday, July 31st, 2014. Operation Shattered in Washington State was launched by the DEA last week to crack down on Washington residents manufacturing butane hash oil, or BHO, at home. Eight Washingtonians were named in the federal indictment concerning open-loop indoor extraction explosions in four cities that injured many and led to the death of the former mayor of Bellevue, who broke her hip trying to escape the resulting fire from a nearby explosion. But on Monday, King County law enforcement raided the home of Debbie Breckler and Josh Mauck, owners of Homeblown Concentrates. While the two operate their extraction business at home, they use a closed-loop system in an outdoor setting, which has not been shown to lead to explosions. Nevertheless, home-based manufacturing of THC remains illegal under state law, even with the passage of Initiative 502. According to Mark Lindquist, Pierce County prosecutor, Breckler and Mauck are charged with reckless endangerment, manufacture of a controlled substance, and unlawful possession of a firearm, and remain in police custody. The Oregon Legislative Revenue Office is estimating tax revenues from legal marijuana to be just 41% of what legalization proponents predicted. A study commissioned by New Approach Oregon by the firm Econ Northwest estimated annual tax revenues of $38.5 million in the first year of its proposed marijuana legalization, but the Legislative Revenue Office is estimating only $16 million. The legislature's estimate predicts that fewer pot tourists will come to Oregon than Econ Northwest predicted, and they predicted no immediate drop in prices, concluding that two-thirds of Oregon's tokers will stick with their black market sources, where Econ Northwest estimated only 60% would stay on the black market. Legislative Review Office also estimates that regulatory costs for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission would total $7 million, bringing the net revenue down to just $9 million per year. Lobbying by the ski industry has now forced Colorado regulators to invent new icons for designating marijuana edible potency. The state task force that is regulating labeling and packaging of edibles had suggested copying the signage associated with the difficulty of ski runs. Green circles for easy, blue squares for medium, and black diamonds for expert. But Colorado Ski Country, the trade group for ski resorts, doesn't want to be associated with marijuana in any way. They lobbied for and got added to the regulations a ban on marijuana products being labeled with, quote, signs or symbols associated with another Colorado business or industry, end quote. Read broadly, this could mean edibles couldn't be distinguished by numbers of stars or thumbs up, like rating movies, any numeric scale, like rating hotels, or even terms like mild, medium, and strong, like salsa or coffee. Decriminalization initiatives for the November ballot in New Mexico's two largest cities are facing opposite outcomes. Officials in Santa Fe on Friday certified about half of over 7,000 signatures submitted as valid, but the 3,569 valid signatures are well short of the 5,763 needed to make the ballot. However, City Clerk Yolanda Vigil said petitioners still had about 2 more months to submit the 2,194 remaining signatures. Also, the Santa Fe City Council will consider approving the initiative, which would reduce marijuana possession to a mere $25 fine. Meanwhile, in Albuquerque, activists Monday turned in over 16,000 signatures for what they were told by the city was a goal of 11,203 valid signatures. But on Tuesday, City Attorney David Turek said the city made a mistake in arithmetic, and supporters actually need 14,218 valid signatures. Even with the mistake, the city clerk staff estimated about 57% of the signatures were valid, putting the Albuquerque effort on pace for roughly 9,000 signatures. Monday was the deadline for Albuquerque's signatures. Marijuana prohibition just can't catch a break in the media these days. While the New York Times continues its excellent series of pro-legalization editorials this week, and while the Los Angeles Times has been exposing the scam of drug courts, the Washington Post's Wonk blog has been battering prohibition with pesky facts and science. In Tuesday's column, former Pew Research and Brookings Institute data journalist Christopher Ingraham explains how medical marijuana opponents' most powerful argument is at odds with a mountain of research. In it, he shows how the "what about the children" scaremongering used by Florida's opponents of medical marijuana flies in the face of 15 years of data showing medical marijuana laws don't affect teenage marijuana use rates. In today's "The Federal Government's Incredibly Poor, Misleading Argument for Marijuana Prohibition," Ingraham eviscerates the ONDCB's response to the recent New York Times editorials calling for legalization. For every argument about marijuana's effect on developing teen brains, he notes, quote, "The same is true for alcohol and tobacco, and that's a solid argument for a minimum age and moderate use." This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, July 31st, 2014. I'm Russ Belville, coming to you live from Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, Washington, one of two open legal pot shops in Vancouver, Washington. And now, time for us to go behind the headlines. In behind the headlines today, the news coming from Seattle, Washington, one Seattle cop wrote 80% of public toking tickets. Seattle Police Chief Kathleen O'Toole has reassigned an officer who reports show wrote almost 4 out of 5 of the 83 citations for public pot use since January. The biannual report on marijuana enforcement also showed that 86% of public toking tickets were written to African Americans, who make up only 8% of Seattle's population. Chief O'Toole writes, quote, "In some instances, the officer added notes to the tickets. Some notes requested the attention of City Attorney Peter Holmes and were addressed to P.T. Holmes. In another instance, the officer indicated he flipped a coin when contemplating which subject to cite. In another note, the officer refers to Washington's voter-enacted changes to marijuana laws as silly," end quote. Chief O'Toole has reported the officer to the Office of Professional Accountability, and he will not be performing any patrol duties while under investigation. Chief O'Toole is the former police commissioner of Boston, whose selection as chief drew rave reviews from the Seattle Times editorial board. She served as chief inspector of the National Police Service of Northern Ireland after it was rocked by a major corruption scandal. Her selection as Seattle's first female police chief, aside from the few days Seattle City Council President Bertha Landis served in 1924, aside from that, her choice as female as the police chief signified the city's willingness to place a successful reformer in charge of a police department still subject to federal monitoring under a settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice. That monitoring is due to a federal investigation filed in March 2011 over, quote, an alleged pattern or practice of excessive force and discriminatory policing in the Seattle Police Department, end quote. According to the surveys conducted by the Federal Monitor in September of 2013, quote, only 35% of the people agree that Seattle Police Department treats people of all races equally, and only 25% believe, quote, Seattle Police Department treats homeless people the same as others, end quote. Almost 25% of Seattle residents report having some interaction with police in the past year, but that interaction is also heavily influenced by race. In traffic stops, Latinos have double the rate, and African Americans have triple the rate of police encounters than do white Seattleites. In non-traffic interactions, Latinos and African Americans both experience almost triple the white rate of police encounters. Regarding the use of force, quote, 45% of Seattleites say Seattle Police Department uses excessive force very or somewhat often, including 70% of African Americans and 62% of Latinos, end quote. The report found African Americans and Latinos were 10 times more likely to report verbal abuse by the police than whites, and 5 times more likely to report police use of physical force other than handcuffing than do whites. And finally, we have another news of a therapeutic hemp CBD bill being introduced in Congress. The most amazing political story in marijuana this year is the rapid acceptance of political and cultural conservatives to accept the medical utility of cannabis, as long as it doesn't get you high. These so-called CBD-only bills in just the past 6 months have passed in 11 states, mostly in the religiously conservative areas of the country like the South and Utah. Now, a conservative Republican from Pennsylvania, Representative Scott Perry, has introduced the Charlotte's Web Medical Hemp Act of 2014, named after the Charlotte's Web strain of low-THC, high-CBD cannabis grown by the Realm of Caring in Colorado. The bill, however, will recognize at the federal level the medical use of any strain of cannabis containing less than 0.3% THC by removing such cannabis from the federal Schedule I designation. Introduction of this bill not only represents the first opportunity for the feds to recognize some form of medical marijuana, it also marks a change in framing by supporters of the CBD-only legislation. Parents and legislators lobbying for cannabidiol used to strongly protest that they weren't legalizing medical marijuana and that the CBD oil wouldn't get anyone high. Now, by calling the bill a Medical Hemp Act and describing low THC cannabis to the media as therapeutic hemp, it seems as though there is a concerted effort to completely divorce THC marijuana from medical consideration. This isn't medical marijuana, they will tell us. It is therapeutic hemp that doesn't get you high. It's a backhanded way to diminish the medical utility of regular cannabis with THC by relegating it to the realm of people seeking a high. Remember when medical marijuana was all about adults suffering with cancer, AIDS, and chronic pain, and how politicians that were opposed to it would say, there's no evidence for marijuana as medicine? Or how we'd hear anecdotal stories, or how tales of miracle cures from marijuana were only myths. When it was regular old THC-laden marijuana, they couldn't stop telling us that we were emotionally tugging on heartstrings to pass medical marijuana laws. When it was medicine with THC in it, we needed more studies, and we were practicing medicine at the ballot box instead of relying on the tried and true FDA approval process. Today, the only politician sounding those alarms about CBD-only legislation being anecdotes over evidence is Louisiana Representative John Fleming. He's all but ignored by politicians who are tripping over each other at the state and federal level to approve therapeutic hemp for seizures, despite the lack of any scientific evidence. They can't move fast enough for the anecdotal stories of miracle cures for those epileptic kids tugging on people's heartstrings in the Capitol. No need to wait for FDA approval process and a bunch of studies in our rush to practice medicine at the ballot box for medical hemp, because it doesn't get you high. These last 6 months of CBD-only legislation passing near unanimously in 11 states clearly illustrate that the battle over medical marijuana was never about medicine, science, studies, and evidence. It's always been about oppressing our right to alter our consciousness. I'm Radical Russ, coming to you live from Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, Washington. And speaking of legalization here, as I've been setting up and working at Main Street Marijuana, I've heard numerous people coming up to the bud tenders and talking to them about their purchase. And many of them seeking marijuana that alleviated some sort of medical condition. I heard people asking if this particular strain was good for cancer, for example. Hey, that sound means it's 20 after. It's 420 in Denver, Colorado. It's Denver time. What's your safety news? We'll be back with a reporter from the local newspaper.
Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization.
Join us for the International Cannabis Business Conference September 13th and 14th in the Portland Ballroom at the Oregon Convention Center. The International Cannabis Business Conference will focus on the emerging cannabis industry in Oregon, the United States, and around the world, putting you in front of the industry's foremost entrepreneurs, political leaders, and attorneys. Also showcasing over 40 cannabis-related industry exhibitors, offering VIP lunches and free nightly networking events. Prepare yourself for America's next great industry.
What the authorities should do is decriminalize pot use. You want to do it in your house, not bother anyone? Fine. Go outside with a joint or a pipe, you pay a fine.
Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines, and we are live from Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, Washington. And I'm joined now by Sue Vorenberg. She's a reporter with The Columbian, and that's the local newspaper here in Vancouver, Washington, Southwest Washington, just north of Portland. Sue, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And reporting on this, you kind of got the marijuana beat, right?
I do. I'm sort of the cannabis reporter.
How'd you get so lucky?
Originally, the beat was sort of split between me and a business reporter. I'm the sort of life features reporter.
Okay.
So I was covering beer and the liquor scene and beer fest and brew fest. And it kind of flowed into that as sort of, here's this new product that's coming out that people, you know, haven't had much experience with. And So I took the fun side of the marijuana beat and she took the business side, but lately I've been doing both.
Yeah. As you've been reporting on this, I mean, this is, of course, 502 passed in 2012. In 2013, it was legal, but there wasn't any marketing going on. There wasn't any business. This year, 2014, the business has started. How fast has this grown, and have you found any surprises in trying to report on this?
It's a constant mess, you know. There's always something new that pops up. I mean, The stores opened, we'd have lots of shortages, we kind of knew they were coming. The growers didn't have enough time to get started, so it's been very clunky, but now things are sort of starting to go forward at the stores. At the same time, the new issue that's popping up is people who come over from Portland, people who come from the airport, They have no place to smoke, so they can buy it here, but then they have to break the law again if they want to smoke somewhere. And that's been a huge issue that's been in the paper the past week or so. There's a store down the street, Mint Tea, that's been trying to support the sort of cannabis economy that's starting up, and they were letting people smoke outside in a tent. But I just heard today that they're going to have to stop allowing people to do that because they may lose their liquor license.
Wow. And it seems to me like, you know, no place to smoke. So that leads people, I know what happened in Colorado is that led people to wanting to use edibles, and then they had all the problems with edibles.
Right.
Washington's not got that problem yet. There's no kitchens doing edibles yet.
Yeah, I think we've been a little lucky in being able to watch Colorado go through that, and the state kind of pulled back and said, let's figure out the dosing amounts and make sure that people aren't going to have the bad experiences that some have had in Colorado. So going slower with edibles, I think, makes sense. And I think we're going to start seeing them in the next few weeks, maybe late August.
Hmm. Has there been a big change at the Columbian, at the paper, as far as getting a lot more subscriptions or web hits because of the marijuana reporting?
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
We've got some people who are canceling their subscriptions to the paper because they don't want us to cover marijuana at all.
Really?
And then on the flip side, we've gotten a lot of support too, and people saying that they love what we're doing. So it's kind of a mixed bag. The county here is fairly conservative, and I understand that, you know, they might have some issues with it. And the city is somewhat progressive, so it's an interesting mix.
So once you get outside the city limits, the dynamics change quite a bit.
Yeah, it gets more conservative.
I see. And again, we're speaking with Sue Vorenberg from the Columbian, and the website columbian.com, is that right?
My blog is cannabis-chronicles.com.
Oh, okay.
And that's part of the Columbian website, but it's more focused directly on the cannabis stuff.
All right, check out cannabis-chronicles.com. As you've been reporting on this, any surprises? Were you surprised by the customers, the demand, the prices, anything?
The prices are a little high. I think I've expected some of this going in.
Yeah.
The customer base has surprised a lot of people because it's working professionals. It's, you know, baby boomers coming back and trying it again for the first time. At least from my reporting, there's a lot of demand for sort of, I'm new to this. How do I do it?
Sure.
And I'm getting a lot of readers of that who are just, you know, trying it for the first time. Don't know what they're doing. And, you know, I think that's interesting that a lot of more people are getting open to it.
Yeah. How's the reaction been from the local law enforcement?
In Vancouver, they've been kind of laying back quite a bit, I think. The state's told them it's sort of a low priority for law enforcement. So I think Vancouver especially has been sort of taking that into account. And I don't know that they've even issued any citations yet, which is kind of interesting.
How about Clark County sheriffs? Is that a different story?
Yeah, they're pretty opposed to it.
It's always the sheriffs, folks. It's always the sheriffs for some reason.
It's the rural conservative kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, check out cannabis-chronicles.com. It's the cannabis blog for the Columbian. Columbian.com, the Southwest newspaper, Southwest Washington newspaper, right here in Clark County and Vancouver, Washington. Sue Vorenberg, thanks for joining us on the show, and good luck on the rest of your reporting.
Great. Thanks a lot, Russ.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to some of the growers in the that are coming in to make their deliveries here to Main Street Marijuana. We'll talk about the shortages and how the Washington State Liquor Control Board has been handling things. Stick around.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. Drug Truth Network, Century of Lies, replaying Mondays at 11 Pacific on 420radio.org.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com and follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
The International Cannabis Business Conference takes place September 13th and 14th at the Portland Ballroom in the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. Featured speakers include Oregon Senator Floyd Prezansky, U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, Daily Dish blogger Andrew Sullivan, author Doug Fine, and Harborside CEO Steve D'Angelo. To learn more, visit our website at internationalcbc.com.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
All right, welcome back. Sorry about that. Welcome back, everybody. We are scrambling here. We're live at Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, Washington, and I'm joined by Ramsey. Is it Hamid or Hamid?
Hamida.
Hamida. Joined by Ramsey Hamida, who's the owner of Main Street Marijuana, not John Larson. I want to just apologize to you directly right up front because there was this report in the New York Times that said that the owner of this place was against 502, but if the people were dumb enough to vote for it, he'd go for it. It wasn't you. It wasn't Main Street.
It was not Main Street Marijuana.
Get that clear.
Nobody at Main Street Marijuana is opposed in any way to the 502 legislation. We're 100% behind it, and we were just as offended by Mr. Larson's comments as everybody else was. So that originated in a New York Times article. There was a real subtle transition between Mr. Larson being discussed and then Main Street Marijuana being messed. Even when I read it, I missed the. I said, "Hold on, he's not with Main Street Marijuana." So.
Yeah, kind of sloppy writing there, and it did lead to a lot of hurt feelings and you know, people talking about boycotts. I was in there talking about boycotts. Don't do it, folks. This is a great place. It's nice. It's airy. There's beautiful people coming in here. Lots of business being done.
Correct. Yep. We went out to Colorado, and we tried to put a lot of thought into our store layout. We've tried to not make it feel seedy or kind of back alley in any way. We've wanted to open it up and have it be a light, bright environment with friendly staff that can provide you with information that's relevant to what's going on in the marketplace today.
Yeah, that's something, you know, Sue with the Colombian was talking about is how, you know, I asked her about the customers. Anything surprise you about the customers? And she's like, well, I guess the only surprising thing is that it's not surprising. It's just everyday people. It's just, you know, working class folks.
It's absolutely everybody. You can't nail it down to a specific demographic. We've seen a lot of baby boomers, people from 45 to 65 coming through our doors that haven't experienced purchasing marijuana in in a couple of decades sometimes.
At least not out of a parking lot or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's you can't nail it down to a specific crowd. It's everybody and everybody, and it means so many different things to so many different people, and we're just happy to be here to partake and participate in, you know, the excitement.
Yeah, you know, one of the stories that is reverberating throughout the cannabis community with regards to Washington's rollout is the lack of supply and high prices. And they're tied together, of course, right. Although there is those 25% taxes. What's your take on this? Is the supply getting better and these prices going to come down?
Yeah, I've been a vocal critic of the prices at the current levels. I don't believe that they're sustainable for the consumer.
Right.
It's not. We're trying to collaborate and cooperate and build a bigger and better industry for everybody. And charging these prices to the consumer is just not a good way to get the industry started. So last week we shut down for a few days. It was kind of a protest here at Main Street Marijuana that we are not going to pay premium prices for less than premium products. So until we have at least a quality level that we feel is to a certain level, then we're not going to pay the high prices and continue this price gouging essentially.
Yeah, that was a story that broke out here in Vancouver, was that the supply is coming in. You know, it's like, it's hard enough getting the supply, but when the supply comes in and a grower's, you know, sending something that's stemmy, that's, you know, not trimmed well, that's just not going to cut it in a now legal market.
Exactly. And to couple that with high prices and premium prices, and then to have subpar products, it's just not worth it. It's a black eye for our business. It's not right for the consumers, and it's not sustainable for the industry. So when we took our stand last week, it was for premium prices on subpar product, and we're just not willing to subject our customers to that sort of a product.
That's great. You know, have someone have ethics about this, that you're not just going to, you know, because this is a seller's market. You could have, you know, put that stuff on the shelf.
They're holding the Super Bowl tickets, and we either, you know, we want to go to the game or we don't. So, you know, initially with the excitement surrounding the opening day and people wanting to participate in such a historic occasion, that a lot of our customers understood that we had to pay a premium, you know, to allow our doors to open within 24 hours of stores being allowed to open. But ongoing, it's not a practice that we're wanting to get into, to condition the growers that they can come to Main Street Marijuana and expect to get $6,000 a pound, and then, you know, where we have to sell it for $10,000 a pound break even, and, you know, maybe make a dollar to pay our staff. So, you know, my background in business is I'm a high volume, low margin guy. I want to have a tremendous amount of product for the consumer's choices, packaging. I want to have multiple strains. Today we were up to 15 strains in house, which is our biggest day, most strains ever. So, you know, I anticipate that within the next 3 to 4 weeks, supplies are going to continue to ease. There's a lot of large tier 3 production facilities that are going to be operating at, you know, near full capacity. And then about a month later, we're going to have that huge outdoor harvest in Eastern Washington. Well, there's some up north, but primarily Eastern Washington, where 10,000 pounds maybe can hit the system. So,
folks, if you don't know about how the 502 works, they got 3 tiers of growers, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, that all got reduced like by 30% of what they were going to grow. But
correct.
The tier 3, the largest group, they can grow 21,000 square?
Yeah, it started off at 30,000 and then down to 21,000 feet of canopy.
So we're going to definitely have some better supply coming in. We're going to get more marijuana coming in through these stores. And I like your position here being high volume, low margin. That's the Costco way. That's the Walmart way. I mean, this is the way business works these days. How big do you think this is going to get? Bigger than this room? Bigger than taking up a block? How big do you want to get?
I mean, ideally, you know, first and foremost, it's about the consumer and the consumer having choice and having a product at a fair price. And until we get to that point, you know, we're not looking at expansions or anything right now. But, you know, I do see the day coming where we will have 100 or 150 different strains. We'll have the edibles, we'll have the concentrates, the, you know, the oils and the vape pens. And, you know, eventually, hopefully, Main Street Marijuana will be one of the leaders in the state of Washington or the Northwest, and will be one of the largest stores with the most strains in the world.
Yeah, and that's part of the rollout as well that's been difficult is, I was just looking under here and your packages say legal weed. I love that. But that has been one of the problems with the rollout here, too, is lack of any certified kitchens. So you don't have edibles. the Washington state rules with regards to concentrates making things difficult. How are those going to get rolled out? Do you have any timelines on this?
Well, you know, the Washington State Liquor Control Board started licensing the processors and the producers, I think early as maybe March. It's the retailers that came on later in the game, but the edibles are from the you have to have a commercial grade kitchen, and we just got the first one licensed about 2 weeks ago. So I think slowly they'll be rolling out, you know, one at a time every couple of weeks. But I think probably within a month we'll see the first edibles start to hit the store shelves.
Great news. We are live at Main Street Marijuana here in Vancouver, Washington. That's on Main Street. And what's the corner there?
Main Street and 24th.
24th and Main. So if you're interested in coming down for our live remote here, all adults 21 and over, you don't even have to be sick.
No, and we're easy. We're 1 mile from the Oregon border, half a mile off I-5. So just take the 4th plane exit, a half mile to Main Street and 24th and Main.
Excellent, excellent. All right, now, I understand you've got some shipments coming in later today.
Correct. Yeah, we had a big shipment from Cannasol Farms last night. They provided us with 12 wonderful strains, a lot of my personal favorites. So we were excited to get them on the shelves and have a working relationship with them going forward. So later today, we have a couple more varieties coming in. And again, tomorrow, we'll reopen with over 15 strains. So as far as I know, that's probably, you know, the most that any store has right now.
Regarding the variety of strains, you know, of course, people understand there's sativas for the head high, indicas for the body high, there's hybrids, and then also people that are looking for CBD dominant strains. How much selection is there and range in that, is there?
Well, I've talked to a lot of processors and producers that are going to have the CBD strains specifically for the pain relief. I know that I've heard 5 or 6 different strains that are coming here within the next month or 2 months. So the CBDs are really popular. There's a lot of people that just want that pain relief and not the head high so much. So it's definitely been something that our customers have been requesting, and that we'll be proud to stock.
Yeah, I've been listening to your bud tenders working with folks and taking questions from customers. Heard one young lady come in talking about how she really enjoyed a particular strain. It made her feel good and kind of woke up her mind, but it made her want to eat the whole fridge. There was another older lady in here who was talking about how she just was really interested in something that would help ease pain and stiffness. And this is, you know, we're getting a lot of questions here. How do you train your bud tenders? How do they know how to answer these questions?
Well, we're not legally allowed to give any medical sort of advice. So it's more just upon about the effects of the specific strain and, you know, how a normal person would interact. But you bring up a good point, and specifically with regards to the edibles, it's going to be a lot of product education and consumer education to allow the customer to dose safely. You know, in Colorado, they've had a lot of issues with improper dosages and people going to the hospital. The Washington State Liquor Control Board has kind of slowed the system down a little bit. Mm-hmm. They wanted an evenly distributed scored section, so you know that this is a 10 milligram dosage. I think what we're really going to do is really hammer it home to the consumer on the edibles that less is more. We want them to take it easy, to start with, you know, 10 milligrams, see how you feel. You know, I think that the consumer, as they get more educated, will know where their, you know, their dosage and their comfort levels lie.
If you had a chance to sit down with the members of the Washington State Liquor Control Board, what advice would you give them moving forward?
Oh, that's a tough question, because there's so many little moving parts.
Can I say that won't get my license pulled?
Yeah, it'd be real careful. Actually, you know, the Washington State Liquor Control Board, they've been overwhelmed, just a tremendous amount of applications. And I think that maybe the biggest hiccup in the system is the licensing of the processors and producers. So we have enough product to properly stock our shelves. So I don't know that there's anything that I could really say to them that's going to speed that up. But if I saw, you know, one area where it would make it a better experience for the consumer with more variety and selection, it would be to get as many of the processors and producers licensed and on board as quickly as possible.
We're speaking with Ramsey
Hamida.
Ramsey Hamida, who's the owner of Main Street Marijuana here in Vancouver, Washington. And prior to getting into the marijuana business, what sort of business did you do?
Well, I've been in the stock market business. I trade IPOs and secondaries, and I've also been a ticket broker for about the last 10 years. So it's kind of funny that you have a guy that's a ticket broker calling out anybody on potential price gouging. But, you know, the 502 is a totally different, animal, and I'm 100% for the consumers. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to our customers. And, you know, I feel that fighting for the consumer and higher quality and lower prices is what this industry should be about from the very beginning.
Absolutely. You know, speaking of stock market, you've got experience in that. You know, the last big industry that popped up. They called it the dot-com boom, and then there was the dot-com bubble that burst. Now they're calling this the pot-com movement. Do you see this as a bubble, or is this just going to keep growing?
Well, I think that it's a tremendous opportunity. It's going to be a multi-billion dollar industry as it gets built out, and I think eventually it's going to lead to legalization nationwide. So it's a tremendous opportunity for us in Washington and Colorado to kind of hit the ground running, to get our experience and the learning curve behind us. And you know, if we have opportunities, Oregon has got the legalization coming up in November, and that would allow people from any state. There's no residency restrictions.
Right.
You know, so potentially there might be a mainstream marijuana in Portland. Come next summer.
Yeah, I was curious about that, how Washington retailers, especially in Vancouver, are reacting to Oregon getting on the ballot when it's going to have, you know, 4-plant home grow, 8-ounce possession at home, and really low taxes and licensing fees. How does that affect Vancouver retailers?
Well, it's going to be very tough for Vancouver retailers. Yeah. You know, strategically, when we were looking at locations, the proximity to Portland played huge in our decision to come down to Vancouver. So the measure in Portland kind of caught us a little bit off guard. But, you know, like I said, we are all for legalization. We are 100% supportive of it in Oregon. And if they pass, then we'll adjust. And hopefully, like, you'll see mainstream marijuana in Portland here soon.
I sure hope so. Well, Ramsey, thanks for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show. Good luck, and good luck on your business.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me in the floor.
We'll talk to some of the growers coming up in just a few minutes. But next, coming up, Radical Rant.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org. At Royal Queen Seeds, we've got premium feminized cannabis seeds, including auto-flowering varieties for the medical cannabis user. We've got bulk shipments available and new CBD oil. Plus, we accept payment in Visa, MasterCard, and Bitcoin, as well as other methods. Check out our website at royalqueenseeds.com for more information. We are located in the Netherlands, and we have online grow experts ready to help you now at royalqueenseeds.com. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Once again, folks, item J343 is the Surfing Monkey Coin Bank. It's great for graduations, wedding gifts, and I believe we sold out on this one last time, so please do not let this one pass you by. Now let's go to caller Scott in Nashville.
Hello.
Now, Scott, I understand you just bought 15 of our Surfing Monkey Banks. Is that true?
Yeah. Chill, man. I'm on TV.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, firedublawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com.
Handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality, no.
How in the century you have slurred the meaning of the words we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions.
I want to have them answered immediately.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 7 after the hour. We are live at Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, Washington. And the subject of today's Radical Rant is marijuana legalization. And, of course, the opponents of marijuana legalization. Today, our rant comes from CNN, which features an opinion article by Dr. Stuart Gitlow, who's the head of the American Society of Addiction Medicine. You could also think of this guy as Big Rehab, the guy who makes a whole lot of money by putting pot smokers into court-ordered rehabilitation. Surprise, surprise, he's against marijuana legalization. And in his op-ed, the first excuse that he gives for opposing what 58% of the American people now support is that many people's lives were cut short by smoking cigarettes. That's right, not marijuana cigarettes, tobacco cigarettes. And because tobacco's illegal, or because tobacco's so harmful, marijuana ought to be illegal. Let me just read to you from Dr. Gitlow's opinion. Many people know one or more people whose lives were cut short by smoking cigarettes. It's a tragedy that could have been prevented. And yet our country stands ready to once again head down the path of accepting another addictive drug, marijuana, as legal. It's almost as if we have to burn our fingers again to be convinced the stove is still hot. As with tobacco, a significant number of people who try marijuana will become addicted. Research says that 1 in 6 teens who start using marijuana will become addicted. Let's talk about this tobacco versus marijuana addiction, though. According to the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, 33%, 1 out of 3 people who tries a cigarette is going to become a lifelong addicted cigarette smoker. 1 out of 3. When it comes to marijuana, it's 1 out of 11. It's 9%, according to National Institutes of Drug Abuse. And that addiction they're talking about, the 9% that do get addicted, are people that choose to smoke marijuana four times or more per month. That's right, if you smoke a marijuana cigarette on the weekend, you could be an addict, according to our federal government. The numbers on this are quite simple. When these guys tell you 1 out of 6 people, 1 out of 6 teens who tries marijuana will become addicted, just calculate the numbers. According to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, there are 108 million Americans, 108 million Americans who have tried marijuana in their lifetime. Not all of them went on to keep using marijuana. Very, very few of them went on to try any other drugs. Out of those 108 million, 60 million people tried marijuana before the age of 18. That's about 6 out of 10, about 60% of the people who've tried marijuana in their lifetime tried it before the age of 18. Out of those 60 million people who tried before the age of 18, the studies also show there are currently 10 million of them that are smoking marijuana 4 times or more per month. Those are your marijuana addicts, folks. If 1 out of 6 kids becomes addicted, 60 million people tried it before 18, and there remain 10 million adults who are smoking regularly, that's what they consider marijuana addiction. A teenager who grows up to use marijuana as an adult. There's nothing about that statistic that talks about using marijuana irresponsibly or using marijuana to excess or having problems in one's life because of marijuana. It is merely an indication that someone chooses to use marijuana. But according to Dr. Stuart Gitlow and the American Society for Addiction Medicine, anyone who chooses to use marijuana is by definition an addict in need of rehab. Dr. Gitlow continues by saying, people can also experience long-term psychiatric disease, and those who use it heavily prior to age 25 are more likely than non-users to experience a drop in IQ. Let me repeat that for emphasis. If you use marijuana heavily prior to age 25, your brain won't work anymore, not as it did originally. How can this guy get on the CNN website and put PhD and MD behind his name, spouting such reefer madness nonsense? Your brain won't work anymore? You mean like Steve Jobs' brain didn't work anymore after he smoked pot? How Carl Sagan's brain didn't work anymore as he was smoking pot regularly? This study that supposedly shows an 8-point IQ drop was a study that followed a few hundred kids in Dunedin, New Zealand. It tracked them from age 13 on through the rest of their lives. And it found that there was an associated 8-point IQ drop with heavy use if they were young. But what it also found is the heaviest users didn't experience the IQ drop. It also found that socioeconomic factors were as equally to blame for the IQ drop as the potential use of marijuana. And it also did not control for the fact that a lot of these kids may have also been using alcohol, which has been shown to reduce IQ scores, and did not control for how well those kids were doing in school or how smart those kids were before they started using marijuana. There's very little about this study that shows us anything useful about youth use of marijuana. Let's continue. Dr. Stuart Gitlow writes in CNN on their opinion pages. He's the head of the American Society for Addiction Medicine. As a society, we will not make money. We will likely lose money, just as we do with alcohol and tobacco. Taxpayers will need to pay more in order to make up for the productivity and illness-related losses that marijuana taxes won't come close to covering. This is the old-fashioned Sabbat conjecture, the idea that it's better to take in no tax money on marijuana than to take in some. But of course, it doesn't even pass the smell test. Alcohol and tobacco cost the society $400 billion, and they bring in $40 billion in taxes. So indeed, we have more costs from alcohol and tobacco than we do from the taxes. The reason for that is alcohol and tobacco are toxic and addictive. They can actually kill you. They will addict you. They will cause emphysema. They will cause lung cancer. They will cause cirrhosis of the liver. There's a reason why we have productivity drops and we have social health costs from alcohol and tobacco. And it's not the fact that they're legal. It's the fact that they're dangerous. Marijuana is neither dangerous nor heavily addictive. It does not cause emphysema or lung cancer. It does not cause violence or cirrhosis of the liver. And the most obvious part about this is the fact that legalization does not invent marijuana. Marijuana already exists. People are already using it. If there are productivity losses, if there are social costs, we're paying them now. We're already paying for the cost of marijuana now. So how about we take in some taxes rather than taking in no taxes? That's what these guys never seem to understand. Another point that Stuart Gitlow tries to make in his CNN opinion piece opposing marijuana legalization, since only a small percentage of state prisoners are there for marijuana offenses, how much would we be saving in criminal justice costs? What? Only a small percentage of state prisoners are there for marijuana offenses? Well, we have a whole lot of state prisoners. We have 1.5 million people in prison. So, and that's at the state level, not including the federal level. So if it's only a small percentage, we're still talking about tens of thousands of people that are in state jails for marijuana offenses. We would at least save that in our criminal justice costs. And his follow-up to say that there are more alcohol-related arrests than all illegal drug arrests combined, for example, drunkenness, driving under the influence, violation of liquor laws, is another red herring. This is him trying to say, oh, well, if we legalize, cops will have more to do because they'll have to enforce marijuana laws. Folks, I am looking around at a legal marijuana store that is currently engaged in a major federal drug trafficking conspiracy. I don't see any cops around. I don't see any law enforcement resources being expended to deal with this. The reason there are more alcohol-related arrests is, again, because alcohol makes people do things that are worthy of arrest. Alcohol makes people drunk drive. Alcohol makes people violent and belligerent. That is why there is more law enforcement costs with respect to alcohol. Another point that Dr. Stuart Gitlow from the American Society of Addiction Medicine is trying to make is that people using would be just getting the benefit of a temporary high while exposing us all to far more drunk driving, more stoned driving arrests, more impaired driving arrests. If you followed our show from yesterday, we took a look back at the 1993 National Highway Traffic Safety Administration study that showed that the impairment due to marijuana is very minor, on par with penicillin and antihistamine. Folks, that's all the time we got for hour one, but stay tuned. Hour two is coming up next. We're going to be speaking with one of Washington State's largest licensed growers about outdoor growing. Plus, thanks for joining us. And until next time.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.